Well, this morning we endeavored to build a case for inspiration and how important it is for us to truly be inspired and not just have a brainy idea, but be in a position where we can really be inspired. Have been in the place where we've received instruction. And when I first began to think about this thought, there's a man in the Bible that come to my mind I'd like to spend a little time talking about. Actually, two men, but I don't know. Maybe I didn't get the verse I wanted. Maybe somebody can help me later on when I get there, but I'm looking for the verse that tells us how many days it took Nehemiah to get the walls rebuilt from the time he started back. But we're not going to need that for a while. But as I was thinking about what it takes or what the impact of inspiration, I was thinking about the conditions that we have, that we grow up in, that impact our ability to really be inspired by God. And I want us to think about tonight those that have operated under adverse conditions. Now, this morning we talked about Moses, and I believe that he got his inspiration from a one-on-one experience with God out there in the wilderness when he was basically in exile, and maybe initially, or maybe that's where it summarized itself, was at the burning bush. But those that Moses led, they got to see inspiration at work, all right? And they got to witness how God used Moses and the manifestation of God's power and being in the place where God's presence was. Those 600,000 men that came out of Egypt, I'm assuming that was those that were 20 and older. They witnessed that cloud by day and the pillar of fire by night, and they witnessed what it was like to follow where that cloud went. If the cloud and the pillar of fire stopped, they stopped. And when it moved, they moved. And they were the ones that saw the water come out of the rock. They saw the manna every morning. They saw the quail coming down. Or hovering to where they could collect the quail and have meat to eat. They saw the Jordan River being crossed. They saw all of those things. They saw the fruit of the land, and yet they said, we're not able. Those people were like grasshoppers in their sight, and they could not get it. And you know, there are those in our age, in our dispensation, in our age bracket, not just the era that we live in, but there are people in our age bracket, whatever that bracket is for you today, that have had a life lived before them. They've had parents, they've had grandparents, they've had maybe pastors and teachers that had the Lord's presence in their life, and they look on that, and yet they're unwilling to get in the place where they really get the inspiration from the Lord. And things just kind of crumble and fall apart all around them. And they go out and make a wreck of their life. It's one of the saddest things that I can ever witness in my life. Unfortunately, I've seen that happening. And I see it developing from time to time. And it really saddens my heart. But one thing that really encourages me is when I see someone that comes from an adverse circumstance that gets inspired. And you come from a other position, someone that comes from a background of non-Christian instruction, comes from a background of brokenness in a home, comes back from a background of hatred and enmity and malice and all of those kind of things. And when you see those type of individuals get a hold of something from God, and they get a hold of an inspiration, and they want to take, they want everybody to know that God is real and that He is there for mankind, and He wants to save people, and He wants to be their friend, and He wants to be their father, and He wants to be their brother. I'm going to tell you, that is something that is really encouraging to me. It's a real blessing to my heart. So there's two men, maybe more than that, but have you ever thought much about Ezra? You know who I'm talking about? There's a book in our English King James Version of the Bible called Ezra. And they tell me that Ezra and Nehemiah were originally one book, and somewhere along the line, and I'm not going to stand here and tell you I understand the whys, whens, and wherefores about it, but Ezra and Nehemiah was separated into two separate books. It does seem to be a chronological account, and from one book through the other. But Ezra is a man that is accredited basically with giving us the rest of the Old Testament outside of the first five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. The first five books of the Bible is called the Pentateuch, and the rest of the Old Testament, although it was written, it was things that were written by various writers. Ezra is the one that most historians agree that he is the one that most likely put them all together and you might say made them fit in amongst, you know, kind of took the writings of the prophets and other things and put, by and large, most all of the rest of the Old Testament together. Some of the Psalms are even accredited to Ezra. But where did he grow up? What was his atmosphere? Can you answer that? Very likely he was born in Babylonian captivity. Not so much unlike Moses' birth. Although Moses was supposed to be killed as a little baby, I don't know that that was quite that strong a judgment against Ezra. But Ezra was most likely born during the time of captivity. Maybe he was a very small child when he left, but we know that by the time the Israelites went back to Jerusalem to rebuild the temple, Ezra was a principal player, and we can read that in the book of Ezra. And we know that by the time they went back, Daniel was a very old man. He was old enough he didn't want to go back, and he stayed in Babylon. It was 70 years approximately, and Daniel most likely was, I don't know, teenager, maybe early 20s when he went to Babylon. We don't know that for a fact, but somewhere's in that way. So Daniel was probably somewhere in the 80 to 90 years old when they went back, and it's a reasonable assumption that Ezra was a much younger man. And if he was a much younger man, then he most likely was born while the Israelites was in captivity. And you remember what Jeremiah said? We'll turn there and read that. That comes to my mind. Let's go to Jeremiah. I believe it's the 29th chapter where he said, build houses and dwell in them. Plant gardens. Maybe somebody can help me with that. What's that? Verse 5. This is what Jeremiah said. Build ye houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. Take ye wives and beget sons and daughters, and take wives for your sons, and give your daughters to husbands, that they may bear sons and daughters, that ye may be increased there and not diminished. And seek the peace of the city, whither I have caused you to be carried away captives, and pray unto the Lord for it, for in the peace thereof shall ye have peace. So, most likely, Ezra was one of those children that was born after they were in captivity. More than likely, he was one of those that Jeremiah, he had encouraged the people, and he said, I know you're going into captivity, I know it doesn't look good, but he said, don't quit living. There's a future out there. You keep on doing the right thing and seek the peace of the place where you're staying, and I believe the Lord will cause that to be your peace. It'll be your stability. It'll be your prosperity and posterity. So Ezra was a product of that. He was a product of being in of a family that was living under the duress of not having the freedoms that they had when they lived in Jerusalem. And his parents most likely died while they were in the Babylonian captivity. That's just a very logical conclusion that I would have to come to. And it says in Ezra 1, this is where Cyrus had given a decree for the Jews to be able to go back and rebuild the temple. He said, who is there among you of all his people? His God be with him, and let him go up to Jerusalem, which is in Judah, and build the house of the Lord God of Israel. He is the God which is in Jerusalem. So, if you had an opportunity to do something of this magnitude, I tell you, it's going to be very important to have inspiration. And it ended up being Zerubbabel that went up. We can read Ezra the second chapter in the 64th verse, and it tells us here that how many people went. It says the whole congregation together was 42,303. That's 360. Besides their servants and their maids, of whom there were 7,337. And there were among them 200 singing men and singing women. So there's about almost 50,000 people that went back to Jerusalem. That's enough to populate a whole city, I would think. It's about as big as Joplin is, or maybe not quite. But anyway, Ezra was there. He was witnessing that. And he was in a position, I don't know if I have this scripture down, but yes, I do. We'll get to that in a little bit. Ezra was a man that had applied himself not just to a suggestion, but to instruction, and he had pursued after the wisdom. And his time while he was in Babylonian captivity as a young man and growing up, he had applied himself in collecting all the manuscripts and some of the ancient copies of the Pentateuch and things of that nature Ezra made. And he was so careful and so diligent that they were able to use those to validate those original books of the Bible. Down through years, Ezra has been the one that they have turned to that has had the reputation of being able to have the things in place where you can validate what the scripture said, or the old copies of the Hebrew. He was a man that was fluent in more than one language. I think some of the book of Ezra is maybe written in Hebrew and some of it in Aramaic or something, another language there. Others that Sir Isaac Newton looks on him as one of the key figures in giving us the Old Testament Bible that we had. And I can't read Hebrew, and I can't read Greek, but there's a lot of people in the past that could read and understand and write in those old ancient languages. But I'm thinking tonight of how that Ezra was able to be in a place to receive the inspiration and have the vision of rebuilding Jerusalem. And being able to, not only that, but he wasn't the only one. Zerubbabel was one that led the charge, and they got the temple rebuilt. Maybe we'll read down some more, turn over to the fourth chapter. And then came along Nehemiah. And I want to tell you, there's some things about Nehemiah that just, they are incredible. It's like someone that comes in that has been raised in a very non-conducive environment, and they come in and get a hold of salvation and being delivered from sin, and they are willing to take instruction, and they just seem to be infused with the Spirit of God, and they're just soaking up. Every chance they get, they're soaking up a little more. And when the Lord is able to take that and inspire them, they can be a mighty tool in the hand of the Lord. You look at Aquila and Priscilla. You remember they took aside a fellow by the name of Apollos. And Apollos was, it says he was mighty in the Scripture. And all he knew was the baptism of John. And Aquila and Priscilla took him aside and explained the way more perfectly. And then he went on to be used mightily of the Lord. And that's what inspiration will do for us, is make this whole concept. There, you know, we face people all around us, and we face mindsets in society today that what we're doing here today is just a bunch of, it's just a hoax. It's just a farce. It's not something that's reality. And people want to deny the very essence and the existence of God and His Spirit. But I want to tell you, if people can get a hold of this, like I feel that I have myself, it's real. There is a, you can deny it if you want to, but I know what's happened in here. I know what's changed in my heart, and I know what the Lord has done for me. And when others get a hold of that, folks, that's where inspiration can really take off and start making an impact in the world. It made an impact in Ezra's day. Let's turn to the fourth chapter and notice the fifth verse. It's talking about the ones that were trying to distract them. Maybe start in the fourth verse. What's that? Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled in building, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. And in the reign of Ahasuerus, in the beginning of his reign, wrote they unto him an accusation against the inhabitants of Judah and Jerusalem. And the purpose of this was, they wrote the enemies of the Israelites, says, I want you to check the records and see if this place, Jerusalem, has not been the seat of rebellion. It's been the place that has overthrown other kings and refused to pay tribute and all. You just find out and see if that's not true. And if it is, let us know. We're ready to help you shut this operation down. And sure enough, they found that Jerusalem had been the center of a mighty nation that had resisted other kingdoms. So it came about that they were put on hold for a while. You know, if Ezra and Zerubbabel and Nehemiah didn't have inspiration, that would have been the end of it. Remember what we said this morning about inspiration? Inspiration will give you a vision of the finished product. And in amongst all of that, they kept working little by little. They didn't make a lot of progress, but they kept working a little by little. Even though the enemies were doing everything, and they even had some authority behind them now, because the king had found what they were worried about. But I'd like to turn now to the 7th chapter of Ezra, in the 6th verse. And Ezra went up from Babylon, and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses, which the Lord God of Israel had given. And the king granted him all his requests according to the hand of the Lord his God upon him. And there went up some of the children of Israel, and of the priests, and of the Levites, and the singers, and the porters, and the Nethims, and the Jerusalem, in the 7th year of Artaxerxes the king. And he came to Jerusalem in the 5th month, which is the 7th year of the king. So I want to try to just fill in the blanks a lot for us, because there's a lot of tedious reading here. But Ezra, I want us to notice, Ezra went up from Babylon and he was a ready scribe in the law of Moses. What does that tell us? He'd been studying. He knew chapter and verse. He had had... The scribe was the ones that copied it. Remember what I told you earlier? He's the one that had made copies of the Pentateuch. How many copies... You know, it'd be one thing... It's one thing for us to... how many of y'all have ever listened to a book? I actually listened yesterday while I was trimming my yard. I spent quite a bit of time with a weed eater doing some other things. And I listened to the whole book of Ezra and the whole book of Nehemiah while I was trimming. Now, that tells you how long it took me to trim up my place. You know, you get quite a bit when you listen. You know, you get more out of it when you read it for yourself. And you know, if you're reading this and copying it down, you get more. And if you made more than one copy as a scribe, you know, if you'd already been through this 2 times and you was on your 3rd copy of the first 5 books of the Bible, don't you think you'd have a lot of it by memory? So what did it say about Ezra? It says he went up and he was a ready scribe. I believe he was probably one of the most well-versed in the old law of anybody of his time. And why? Because he had been through this instruction part, and it was filling him up. He was infused with the word, with what the law said. And when it came to the point that he saw a door, he was able to receive. He was in a position, he was ready for inspiration. And at that point, he became a real instrument in the hand of the Lord. And you know, when he got there, he found a lot of things in disarray. There were people of the priesthood that were marrying ites of the land. And he had a lot of dysfunction that he had to sort out. There were people that were not supposed to be part of the, not be dwelling there in the temple. They weren't supposed to be serving in the temple. And he had to do a lot of house cleaning. And he did some fasting and praying and weeping before the Lord before he implemented. But I'm going to tell you, he had the inspiration. He had a vision. He was willing to step out. And remember what we said this morning, in the kind of uncharted waters in the areas that he wasn't comfortable in. And inspiration saw him through and he got the job done. And the one place, I believe, the leaders of the land says, "Now look, this is something that's going to take a little while. Just, it can't be done in a day or 2 days. But they did. They followed through with it. And why? Because inspiration was there. He had got the, he felt the charge and the burden from the Lord. He knew which way he was going, and he knew what God wanted out of him. Now let's go down here, beginning in the 10th verse. He says, "For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments." That is powerful, folks. And when we have real inspiration, it will empower us to be able to do the same thing. He says, "For Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it, and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments." Now this is the copy of the letter that King Artaxerxes gave unto Ezra, the priest, the scribe, even a scribe of the words of the commandment of the Lord and his statutes. And Artaxerxes, king of the kings, unto Ezra the priest, the scribe of the law of God of heaven, perfect peace. And in such a time, I make a decree that all they of the people of Israel and of his priests and Levites in my realm, which are minded of their own free will to go up to Jerusalem, go with thee. But the point I want us to get to is here that he not only was a ready scribe, he was not only educated, if you will, but he had prepared his, what did it say? His heart. So not only do we need to have a mental understanding, but our heart has to be in the right position. Remember, it's more than just a suggestion, because it has no consequences. It has to be, we need to go past instruction. We need to have been receptive to instruction and the consequences of not following through with that. And then it comes to the place of being filled up with this, the color and the fragrance and the power and the authority of the Word. And then we're in a place where we can really receive inspiration. Not an off the hand, I stepped on the Lego and now somebody has got to do something. Now, you know, we call those impromptu things that happen in homes and on the job, and we call them spur of the moment things, right? I remember one time on the job that something happened that wasn't supposed to happen, and our supervisor, our manager, called us all in and had a meeting. And he, one of the things he said, from now on, and he was pointing his finger up in the air, and he had something he was feeling pretty passionate about. But it wasn't really, it wasn't based on any solid principle. It was a bee in his bonnet. It was just a something that happened, and he was trying to address it in the best way he felt like possible. But I'm going to tell you what I'm trying to get us to get a hold of this today is that this inspiration from God is something much more powerful than just a bright idea. It's much more powerful and it's more effective long term. When I have a vision of something, young people, you got a vision of a home, of where you want your children to go, don't flame out when they get to where they can dress themselves and tie their own shoes. You know, sometimes we see that happening. Where parents, it's like when they get to the point that they can tie their shoes and write their name and dress themselves, it's like, I don't know what to do with them now. Parents is just to get them to... No, you're just getting started good. I'm telling you, we have to adapt. What's our vision? I wanted my children to do more than be able to tie their shoes and write their name. I'll just tell you, I had a lot... My vision was a lot further down the road than that, and we have to have that. Where do you want them to go? How do you want to shape their lives? What kind of values are you trying to put in there? Lord, help us when we have a vision of the church, a vision of God's cause. What is it? Is it something that we work a while on and say, well, I don't know, it's probably not that big a deal. You know, it's just a suggestion anyway. No, it's not. It needs to be an inspiration. It needs to be something from the Lord. It needs to be something that we're willing to put our heart into and make sacrifices for and give ourselves and put ourselves into and look for a place to maybe step out of my comfort zone a little bit. Before we got married, my children have a hard time maybe grasping this, but before we got married, I probably had a, a reputation amongst young people about being shy and not talking very much and all those kind of things. And they thought when I began to a courtship with Anita that she brought me out of all of that. I don't know, maybe she did. But it had to be something more than just a little impromptu thing for us to be able to do anything in His service. We have to have inspiration. I'd like to go to the last man I don't want to talk about today, and his name is Nehemiah. Well, I want to read in the first chapter, beginning. I'll start in the first verse, the first chapter of Nehemiah. It says, "The words of Nehemiah, the son of Hakaliah, and it came to pass in the month of Chislew in the 20th year, as I was in Shushan, the palace." Does that place sound familiar? Shushan. Who else lived in Shushan? Esther. Okay. Might be some correlation there. I'm not going to go down that path, but y'all might do some studying on that. "Then Hanani, one of my brethren, came, he and certain men of Judah, and I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem." So he's asking about, how's things going back in Jerusalem? Over there where they went to rebuild the temple, where they went to repair things and put it back in order. Because a few kings ago, when Cyrus was a king, he made the decree. Nehemiah, for sure, was a man that was born in captivity. He was a man that was not born in his homeland. "And they said unto me, the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates there are burned with fire. And it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." Looking for something, wasn't he? He's trying to be in a place, "Lord, what do I do now?" So, second chapter, first verse. "It came to pass in the month of Nisan of the 20th year of Artaxerxes, the king, that wine was before him, and I took up the wine and gave it unto him, and now I had not been before time sad in his presence. Wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid." So he was not in a very elevated position. He was a servant to the king, but he was a cupbearer. Now, bear with me here. I've had this is my personal little thing in my own head, so I'm not going to bind it on anybody, but I just got this idea of the king choosing somebody that was maybe nimble on their feet, but not necessarily big of stature to be his cupbearer. I just got it in my head that Nehemiah was a small built fella. I don't know how big he was. He might have been extraordinary in his proportions. But in my mind, if I was a king, it'd be one thing if I was wanting somebody to cut logs or to hew stone, but this fella, he just needs to be able to bring me my cup, and he can be a small fella. But Nehemiah had a full-sized heart, whatever he was. He had his heart in the right place. Although he was serving in a foreign land to a king that was not worshiping the God he worshiped, he was endeavoring to do what? To be infused with the Word of God. And he got to this place and he was so sad. It was affecting his countenance. And it ended up that he got authorization from this king to go and take whatever resources he needed. And he got over there. Somebody else find the verse for me. I was reading this afternoon and didn't write it down. But he got over there in the third and the fourth chapter, maybe. Maybe it's in here in the second chapter. He got to Jerusalem, and he got up at night and went around the walls of Jerusalem and surveyed the damage. And it was just like they said. The walls were all broken down, and I can only imagine it'd been 70 years. What happens in 70 plus years? Maybe 100 years now. Read that. So verse 11 of chapter 2. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days, and I rose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, neither was there any beast with me save the beast that I rode upon. And I went out by night by the gate of the valley. Well, I'm not going to read it all because it becomes tedious, but he went around and surveyed the damage, and what hadn't been torn down was burnt with fire, the gates and all of those things. But in 70 to 100 years, there's, folks, there's big trees growed up in some of that. There's rubble there that erosion and rain and wind and things have happened, and it's a mess. You might as well start over. And it's a wall around a whole city. Think about the scope of that. Think how overwhelming that task. Think how sad he was. They've had years to work on this and it hasn't been done. But he was able to rally the people and organize. I'll just try to cut through this so that I won't maybe bore you too much. But he was able to rally the people and organize the work effort where everybody had a section of the wall. Every family had a section of the wall to build. And here in 6 and 15, is it? It says, so the wall was finished. What did I say about inspiration? It helps you see the finished product to get a vision of what it's going to look like. And it says here, so the wall was finished. Who was in charge of this operation? The cupbearer. Not Saul that was head and shoulders above everybody, but a cupbearer from a foreign land. Someone that had themselves in a position, had prepared their heart, I believe, like Ezra, but he had prepared his heart. He was concerned about his people and his homeland. And he said here, so the wall was finished in the 20th and the 5th day of the month Elul, in 52 days. There's been a lot of questions about did they actually finish from start to finish in 52 days. I don't know. I don't want to get into a debate. I just know what it says right there. It's in black and white in my Bible. Does it say something different in yours? It says in 52 days. You know, in the very beginning, it says that the Lord created the whole world in how many days? In 7. And it said here, if the Lord can make the whole world in 7 days, I don't know why Nehemiah and a handful of people couldn't fix a wall in 52 days. With God's help and inspiration. Now look how powerful that is. Now, we're not a congregation of 3,000 or 300. And we're not even a congregation of 30 today. But you know what inspiration will do? Big things. That's what it'll do. They finished the wall. Not only did they have to clear the rubble out, I don't know how much of the stones they reused. I don't know how much of the... But all I know is they finished it in 52 days, and when the enemies heard about it, let's read that next verse. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived this work was what? Wrought of our God. You know, that's what we want, isn't it? It's not Brother So-and-so's church. That's not what it's all about. This is the church of God. That's what we want to support. That's what we want to get an inspiration for. That's what I believe God can do for us in our age that we live in our generation that we find ourselves in our community that we live in, and in the environment that we have to work with. Yes, there's some things going on right now that make me want to pull my hair out, so to speak. It's real distressful what's happening in our society all around us. But you know what? Ezra and Nehemiah had the same thing to deal with. They were threatened. They told them that this wall, I mean, if you build it up and a fox walked on it, it'd fall over. They must have had some big foxes, is all I got to say. Because they, when they got done, they realized that this is something that God was working with. You know, that's what we want, isn't it? But we can't get there without real inspiration. And we're not going to get real inspiration because we just had a thought. I just had a thought. From now on, you're going to do it this way. No, it's more than that. We got to have more than a suggestion. We got to really apply ourselves. It's been quoted here many times that we ought to study to shew ourselves approved. Get the word in our heart. Get the fire of the Lord in our souls. And then as we look out in this community around us, I believe the Lord can give us inspiration and know how to direct our efforts and what to do to share the gospel. There's hurting people all around us, folks. There's people that's got broken lives all around us. Lord, help us to be the right hospital for them, to be the right avenue where they can have peace. Folks, inspiration is a powerful thing. It's inspiration will change the world. It changed. Jerusalem was in shambles. The whole temple was torn down. The walls were destroyed. But these men that received their inspiration didn't receive it in the same type of environment that the people did that was following Moses and Joshua. The people that were following Moses and Joshua, we look on them and they say, what's the matter with you? Why couldn't you be inspired? Why couldn't you really get a hold of it? You had it rolled out to you, so to speak. But here we find Ezra and Nehemiah were able to get the inspiration in a land of captivity, not a land of conquering and victory and wonderful blessings from the Lord. And I don't know where all of us come from all together, but I know what my background is. And I'll just tell you, shame on me if I can't be in a place where I really have inspiration. I've been handed something, folks. And if I can't be in a place where I'm willing to take instruction and really receive inspiration, it's my fault. It really is. If I'm not willing to prepare my heart like Ezra did, the lack of inspiration I'm going to stand before God with. And I don't want to stand before him guilty. I want to hear him say, well done. And I want all of us here today to be inspired to do what we can for the kingdom and realize, yeah, we're working in the adverse conditions. This is not a place to take vacation or anything necessarily. But I believe, dear ones, that we have something that the world needs and that the world wants. They just don't know what to ask for. Lord, help us to know how to share it and have the inspiration to know how to do it. You pray for me.